Hello, Truth Seekers, and welcome to another episode of We Want the Truth. I'm Pierce, and today we are talking about a very important and dear topic to me, squash the sport, and more specifically, the life of a squash athlete. Diving into the life of a professionally ranked squash player, this week we'll be sharing the truth on what it means to be a squash athlete, training both mentally and physically for the sport, and the realities of being a pro. For you truth seekers looking to learn or improve your squash game or hear what it's like to be a pro athlete, this is the episode for you. With that being said, let's get into this week's episode. All right, well, this week we have another incredible guest. She's currently ranked 19th on the Professional Squash Tour, a senior national team member for Team Canada, and is a two-time Canadian national champion. She is also sponsored by Noon Hydration and Wilson Sporting Goods. And today she's going to be sharing her journey on what she had to do to become a pro and the realities of her journey within squash. So this week we have the one, the only, Holly Nodden. Holly, how's everything going with you today?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I know you're jumping around the world just playing. How's that like?
Interesting year and a half with COVID. It's changed the amount of travel for sure. A lot more downtime and a lot less traveling and a lot of travel to Egypt, which we normally wouldn't get there as much as we have been over the last year and a half.
Interesting. And how's Egypt faring with the whole pandemic and everything?
Well, they just aren't quite hyping it up as much as the rest of the world.
I see. So they're a little bit more laissez-faire, I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I'm really curious to dive a little bit more into your journey, but I would love to just start off by learning really firstly, what motivated you to even get into squash in the first place?
Well, I grew up around a squash court. My mum, dad and aunt all played squash in the UK when I was little. To say I was born to be a squash player would probably be quite accurate. From a very young age, I was sat in front of the court watching them play. And still to this day, they're all playing at various levels. And my aunt still competes. She competes. Wow. European and World Masters Tour. My mum competes in doubles and dad just plays for fun. But yeah, it was kind of a family affair, really. And didn't like squash too much to begin with.
Oh, really?
When I was in the UK, I played football. And that kind of was what I liked to do. Well, football, soccer in Canada. But
yeah.
And then when I moved to Canada at the age of 10, that's when I kind of really started to enjoy squash and wanted to pursue it a bit more seriously.
Interesting. And what do you think that shift was for you to enjoy it more? Like, was it more of like the Canadian atmosphere, do you think? It was just like maybe the age that you came at? Like, what do you think was sort of the trigger for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a combination of things, probably moving over in England, I had been involved in football for so long and had the team dynamic and really enjoyed it. Moving over here, it was a different team. I don't think I quite enjoyed it as much. And with squash, it's kind of all on you. You are the one that controls the outcome, you put in the effort. I found I was on the team and I'd get very frustrated with the other players that necessarily as good. And so I think that probably was the shift, was that I wanted to be in control of winning or losing and putting in the effort. And like you said, maybe the age, maybe it was just a maturity thing where something switched and I thought, you know what, I actually do like this sport. Maybe it was just a bit of rebellion, being forced to go down to the squash courts all the time. Who knows?
No, I totally get you. Like I played a lot of volleyball back in high school, but I think maybe it's just like the inner control freak in me. I just really, you need that 100% control. I don't know what it is. You know, you get on court, like it's like you said, everything's on you. Like you put in the hours to train, you put in the hours to play, like everything comes down to you. Whereas you can't necessarily control all the other team, maybe control other team members isn't the best phrase to use, but sort of can't have more control of like how everyone's training and like preparing for everything.
Exactly. I definitely think I have a control side of me. I like things to be my way. I like to know what I'm doing. I don't like the uncertainty. So I think you hit the nail on the head there is definitely that control within side of me that I like the individual sport.
But I think the other thing too, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit more as well, but I think the one thing that really turned me on to squash was really like the atmosphere of playing tennis and playing badminton before, like the atmospheres at those tournaments, it's very tiger parents almost, where it's like, you got to win, you got to do this, you got to do that. Whereas with squash, like, yes, it is very competitive, but there's a really great social atmosphere at the end of the day, whether it's like local tourney or if it's like a bigger like Canadian event, like everyone's still friends afterwards, everyone still like goes out and has a good time. Like would you agree with that? Or
yeah, I think that's the one unique thing about squash, whether it's because it hasn't got the massive profile of the other sports on, or if it's just maybe the people that squash brings in. But definitely the social aspect and the friendliness, and I can attest to it throughout the world. Yeah. Every country I go to that I play squash in, it's the same community as in England or in Canada or wherever it is. It's so friendly and inclusive, and it really doesn't matter what level you're playing at, it stays the same. And I think that's one of the things that's kept me playing squash and wanting to play pro. Is it's the same thing on the pro tour. We're wanting to win. We're all wanting to be the best we can be and ultimately be the best in the world. But there's still that friendly, like friendships, really. When you come off the court, you know, the door opens, you shake your hands and you give each other an hour or a couple hours or maybe a day, depending on how the match has gone. But then ultimately we're back to being friends. And I think that is something that I've always said stood out a lot compared to, like you said, you know, the tennis mentality. I've spoken to tennis players and parents and they can't believe when I say, oh, yeah, I'm going on holiday with a few of the squash girls. And they're like, but you compete against them. Why are you going on holiday with them? It's like, no, like they're my best friends. And I think that's what's so amazing about squash is that you can just have these lifelong friendships, even though you're competing against each other at such a high level.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible. I don't know what it is about squash, but you know, I'm still very close to some of the like the Western guys that I played squash with, you know, even some of the younger guys I still played with, even though we all competed against each other. And mind you, there are some great wins and some really horrible losses, but it's sort of like just water under the bridge where maybe with other sports, like, I don't know, maybe people just are a little bit more like they hold on to grudges a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, who knows? I mean, hopefully in the years to come, maybe hopefully squash will have a higher profile and time will tell if it is just to do with that or if it is just the people that's involved in it.
I think you also made another interesting point, like when you turn pro, like this is where you all start having these like life experiences, building more of these friendships, traveling the world. I would love for you maybe to share a little bit more about what was sort of the trigger for you to be like, okay, like, this is it, like I need to play professional, or like this is a career I want to have.
I think it was a combination of things. I didn't have the best time in high school. I didn't love it, didn't have too many friends, and squash was kind of always there and was very inclusive, and that's where I had my strongest friend group. And I think because of the time in high school, kind of feared going to universities and possibly having another 4 years like I had in high school. And then I also sat the SATs once and said, I am never sitting that again. So that eliminated all of the US schools. And at that time, it was like when I was about 15, I'd say 15, 16, just started to climb up the Canadian rankings and started playing some international tournaments. So I started to see that the level and see that I wasn't that far off the top girls in the world. So I think it was just a combination of all of that.
It's interesting that you bring up the college experience too, because I know Mizan Hasham, like the Falcon on tour, he made a post about that a few months ago talking about like, do you think like going to a US school like makes a difference? Or do you think like just going into like professional squash is like the better route to go for an athlete? So I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on that debate that you sort of shared on Instagram.
I see both sides. You've got the positives of going to university. You get some experience. You get exposure to different things. You get a university degree. So if squash doesn't work out, you can fall back on it. On the other side of it, you're missing 4 critical years of where you are growing. You can, for your strength, for all of that side of it, your growth as a squash player, I think that's quite a key 4 years. And by the time they come out of university, you know, you're what is it, 23? I mean, you're still young, but I think you've missed a few years where you could really work on the solid structure that you need in place. There's only really been a couple players that have really managed to come out of university and hit the height of their squash so quickly. And, you know, I think those players stand out and are one of the kinds. There's the amount of players that were top juniors that have gone into the US cycle or system, whatever you want to call it, and come out playing still or being at the top of the game is very few. I'd say played some of them that have gone, played them a year before they've gone into university and then played them 4 years after. And if anything, I'd say that the level has actually dropped since.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's such a difference in the UK idea of, you know, it's not quite as streamlined into the university, and then you've got the US and Canada where it's like you got to go to university, you got to do X, Y, and Z. And I think there's pros and cons to both. And I think me going pro straight from high school, I got different learning opportunities. A week after graduating high school, I jumped on an aeroplane and flew to Australia. And it doesn't necessarily make you grow up like it does if you went on a different path. And university is not going anywhere. I truly believe that I will study at some point, or at least I have that opportunity to do it if I want to, you know, with the online university or just going to university later on. And I think for me, if I do that, I will have a better understanding of what I want to do in university and to apply myself better. Whereas if I'd have gone at 17, who knows if I would have even completed it, because I don't think I would have really known what I wanted to do or really wanted to be there. So I think going back to the US thing, I think some of these kids that are maybe forced into going to university that might want to just be playing squash, who says they're actually going to apply themselves properly? And then they probably might come out doing both half-heartedly, because it's that, well, they're not really applying themselves to the school, so then the grades are dropping, and then they're not really applying themselves to the squash because they're worrying about the grades. So it's got to be an individual, personal decision, but I definitely think if you truly want to be a professional squash player, that why not go straight away?
I think that there's some really fair points. Ali Farag went to Harvard, jumped to world number one. Amanda Stopi, I think Amanda actually went to Harvard as well, right?
She did, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yes, and then she's like she jumped to top 10.
Yeah, I think she's 5 or 6 right now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I haven't checked the rankings in a while, but I also know she had an Achilles injury like about a year or two ago. Is that?
I think almost 3 years ago.
Years ago? Okay. No, I think it's an interesting debate because I went to school and played squash. Mind you, I had no intention of ever playing professionally, even though in my wildest dreams, I would definitely do it. You know, the stressors of not only like a sport, but then academics and then extracurriculars and trying to have a social life. It's all way too much. So I would agree with you. I think there's no one way. I think there's the unique cases, but everyone's sort of got to take their own path, which I find best. But if you don't know what you want to do, why waste money on university, which is a point I definitely agree with.
Exactly. There's no right or wrong. I think I don't see any downside of taking a year off or a couple of years off to discover yourself and discover what you actually want to do. And if in those couple of years you play some squash and travel the world and get experiences that way, then I don't see any downside.
You've actually broken into the top 20 this year. So firstly, like, huge congratulations. I know that's been a big thing that you've been working for. You've been on the tour for a while. Like, how did you feel when you found like you broke the top 20 and you're like inching closer to that world number one spot slowly but surely?
It was a weird feeling. A few people's asked me this, and I think just with everything that was going on in the world, and like you said, that was kind of one of my goals for a little bit, was breaking into this next barrier. And I feel like in my head, I built it up that, you know, I'd hit top 20 and it would be not like a relief, but it'd be like this big stepping stone and I'd feel, I don't know, happier maybe. It was, yeah, it's just such a strange one. Who knows if it's just because I feel like I can do so much more. So you know, when back when I made those goals, it was like top 20, that's such a good step and this and that. But then when I kind of got to the top 20, I think it's still searching, still know I can do more. So it's spoke to my sports psychologist about it. And she's like, you know, you still got to celebrate. This is a huge goal that you've been working towards. But I think because I feel like I can still do more, I just didn't quite get that happiness and enjoyment. And whether it was because of everything else was shut down and I couldn't see my friends to celebrate or my family properly, I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, I'm happy, obviously, that I'm,
yeah.
but I'm still think I can do better and that there's a lot more to achieve. So it's still got to keep chipping away.
I think next, what I'd really love to talk about is squash, unfortunately, doesn't have the mainstream media attention that we would all like it to have. And we typically get a really deep dive into, you know, like Rafa Nadal's life, Djokovic's life, all these like big names. So I would love to hear, like, from your perspective, Holly, like, what's a day in the life of like a professional squash player?
Well, a regular day and a COVID training day, different. I would say now I've definitely been focusing more on the physical side of things over the last year and a half. I mean, I've been working on the little smaller things. I found that's been a big help, a lot more mobility. So I try to start off the day with about a 30-minute mobility session.
Wow.
And then have my lunch, breakfast, and do a cardio session, whether that would be bike sprints, or I've started running, which is my least favorite thing, but I have found it's been a huge help with my fitness and everything. I've been doing quite a bit of skipping for cardio just because it's been easy during the COVID times. All you need is a skipping rope and you can get a great workout in. So that would be kind of like my morning. And then if I've got access to a squash court, I might play mid-morning, so I try to get that all in quite early, and then my squash would be maybe at like 10:30, 11-ish, and then have lunch and a break, and then either another gym session or squash would be kind of the typical day.
Interesting. And do you find that when you're doing the same type of training every day, it can be quite like redundant?
I quite enjoy the physical stuff. And I think quite a few of my friends on tour have said, I don't know how you've just kept going throughout it all. But I kind of tried to mix it up. Like I said, I've been adding in things that I wouldn't have normally done and tried to kind of get my week doing a variety of things. So not just doing the same old thing, not just sitting on a bike for hours on end, using YouTube videos, whether that, you know, to do yoga sessions or mobility or even a workout. My aunt has a trainer in England that was doing workouts online. So I started doing those and I found doing different sorts of workouts was helping my body adapt in different ways and felt very, very strong for doing different things. So I think like anything, like you said, you know, you've got to keep being creative and keep trying different things to just keep your muscles not used to the same old, even though doing very similar things day after day. But if you do them in a slightly different way, then I think your body responds a lot better.
You have a pretty incredible team behind you, right? You got your family, you got a lot of the other ladies that you train with, I know of pretty regularly. And again, you mentioned you work with David Palmer, and then as well, like you have a sports psychologist that you work with. I'd love to hear how each part of your training sort of influences and has influenced your squash, from like a psychologist to working with David Palmer.
Yeah, I think like anything, you've got to have a good team behind you, and everything that I'm doing is run by all of my team members, which as I've been in the UK, you know, I'm at Pontefract Squash Club, was training with Malcolm Wilstrop, who recently passed away. But I've had the support of all of that team as well, and David's my main coach, so I run everything by him. Having a flow and a system, and they know what I need to work on. David squash-wise, my sports psychologist watches my matches so she can see those areas that need, especially over this COVID time where I haven't been able to necessarily got on court as much. She's played a huge part in that side of things, you know, a lot of getting the mental side to flow a bit more throughout the training sessions, catching myself when mental self-talks maybe flying away into the negative side or just anything really. But I think they all have played a very different part. David, any squash player would know, is a very physical squash player. He was known as the Marine on tour. And when I first started working with him, I definitely wasn't in shape. And he's always going to push me in that. You know, I just had a phone call with him today and we're talking about me doing hill sprints. And I said, oh, the hill's not that long. He's like, well, I just have to do a few back to back then. You know, it's just little things like that. You know, it keeps you pushing and they all know me very well and they know when they need to push me and when they need to tell me to back off or change things. It's all very unique in the ways that they're helping.
I will always remember this one experience I had meeting David Palmer because I was a big fan of his from a very young age. And we were playing Cornell one time and I saw him watch my match. I'm like, oh crap, like I really have to play well. And I think I actually won that match and David just like came over to me, sat down, looked at me, said, you played well. And then just got up and walked away. And I was just like, all right, this is putting fuel in the fire. David Palmer's saying I'm doing well. Yo, I gotta pick up the pace here. But I think, you know, again, sort of coming back to the point of like having a good team behind you, what would you say was the biggest barrier for you being a squash player professionally where there's something in your playing or your training that just wasn't right? And then like, you've really had to overcome it.
Well, I think there's always things that you're going to have to overcome. I think no matter, you think you get over one hurdle and another one comes in its place. I think the mental side is a huge part, especially for me, just that mental endurance, I would call it.
Right.
I have moments where I feel like I can stick to what I want to do and it all flows and fits into place. And then I go off of it a little bit and then it's a bit in and out. So I think from that standpoint, that's something that I think is always going to have to be worked on. And I think the higher up you get, just talking to my mum about it the other day, that I see these patterns reoccurring at every ranking level jump that I make, that I keep having very similar stages that I keep going through. I wish I could speed them up a little bit now I'm very aware that they're happening, but I think you've just got to roll with it a little bit. And like I said about the team, you know, if you trust in your team and you trust in what you're all doing and what everyone's goal is for you and what the layout, then I think you will overcome them. I think, you know, it's just part of sport, it's part of life. I think anything you do, you're going to have ups and downs. You're never going to just have a clear cut, smooth sailing hill straight up. It's always going to be up and down. And that's the whole part of the journey and the excitement, is that you keep coming up and down and getting over these little obstacles, whether it's physical obstacles with the body or whether it's mental or anything really. But I think, you know, for myself, I'm lucky I haven't had any major injuries. A niggling ankle that tends to pop up every now and again, but nothing major really. And you know, there's always going to be, got to work on my variety and my shots, and that's something that I'm trying to have fun with now and work on that. But you know, you just got to stick with it. It's you've got to go a bit down before you come back up. And I've had moments where I've called David or my mum or dad and said, you know, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Like, it's for a squash player, as we said, it's not as high profile as other sports, so the money isn't quite there. And you know, had going tournament to tournament, barely making any money, and you know, in negatives most of the time to begin with in my career, and getting to points where I'm like, I just don't know if I can keep doing this. And like I said, with my team around me, you know, they said, Holly, it'll be worth it if you just keep going. Like, you can see the improvement and this is what you want to do. Like, just because it's a little hiccup, don't stop doing it. So yeah, I think you're always going to have ups and downs. It's just part of it.
Is there any match that sort of stands out to you where it sort of changed your perspective on like the hiccups that you're talking about? Like, yo, like, this is why I'm here.
I think I've had little matches that have been a bit of an eye-opener like that. I remember a long time ago in a 10K, I think it was a 10K in Virginia, I was playing, I think, the number 2 seed. I think I might have been 2 love down maybe. And I just remember having this moment of like clarity in the match. And I ended up winning the match, and it was probably back then one of my biggest wins. But that was kind of in that moment and in that time frame in my career. I just remember that being a kind of a standout moment mentally. I didn't let the mind kind of go and me end up going into this, I used to call it a fog of anger. I just feel it like bubble up and boil over, and
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to stop it. And I was really struggling with that. And I'd also, I think, had a few matches and losses. And this match, I just, yeah, I think that was a huge match. And then another big match where I would say that was kind of like a eye opener. I ended up losing, but the US Open, I played Reneemel Wilili and lost in five.
I do remember that match, actually, now that you're saying it.
Yeah, but that was a great match in a lot of senses, because I'm playing the best player in the world, who we all know has ups and downs, and
yeah.
She can show a class, and she showed it that day because she was two love down and came back and won in five. But yeah. That was a good match just to kind of show that I can compete with these girls, and I, you know, just to keep with it. And I learned a lot in that match, even though I lost. So yeah, I think I'm still looking for that match where I'm like, yes, that's it. But I've had little moments in matches where I've felt or things have snapped into place.
Is there anyone you would like to just like take down, just like have that moment with?
I don't know if I can say that. I've got to keep those inside.
Ah, I gotcha. I gotcha.
when it happens, I will let you know.
Yeah, I'll just be watching the match and I'll wait for you just to point at the screen and just be like,
yeah, that's what I'll do. Just point, you'll know.
You heard it here first, people. Just watch PSA, wait for Holly to point at the camera. That's pretty much it.
I wouldn't say I've really got any big rivalries or anything like that yet. So maybe one day, but not quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not got any matches where I can say that I'd really want to go out and beat someone or anything like that yet. I want to beat everyone, but not one person.
Keep those personal goals to yourself. We'll know when those happen.
Exactly.
You talked a little bit about, like, you know, the money and, you know, sort of the lifestyle of being a squash player. Like, obviously, when people think about competitive athletes, they assume it's a very lavish lifestyle, like everything's taken care of for you, you know, from like a touring perspective and from being pro on the squash tour. Like, what's it really like to be a pro squash player on the tour? Like, is it as lavish, would you say, as everyone thinks it would be?
Definitely not lavish. I'd say maybe the top couple players in the world would be making a decent living. But on the overall, I mean, I'm top 20 and I barely make any money. It's a tough life. With, like you said, squash doesn't have the profile of other sports. It doesn't have a media presence. So it is a bit more difficult to find sponsors and people that are willing to invest in you when the stuff you can give back to them is not necessarily as great as if we were another sport. We haven't got that media presence. We haven't got the outlets within Canada where we'd be all, you know, you'd see the logo or we'd be able to do more for them. So I think that is tough. I think a lot of other sports where they make their money is on the sponsorship side, where then they have sponsors take care of everything and the prize money is your money to actually bank and invest and do something with. And I think it is difficult for sure. I think I play squash because I love it, and this the love for the game is what keeps me playing. It's definitely not the money. It's not the financial side. So I think if you truly love something, you're going to keep doing it regardless of what it might do to your bank account or anything. But it's definitely not a lavish lifestyle. Flying economy, it's scraping by some months, and that's just part of the package.
But as well, I think a lot of people like see some like the incredible locations that you go to. Besides like tennis, yeah, you have the really great courts, but I think unique part about squash is that a court can literally be set up anywhere in some of the most beautiful locations. So from that point of view, like, what has been like your favorite venue to play at?
I think for me would probably be when I got to play in front of the pyramids in Giza. And I mean, like you said, the awesome thing about a squash court is you can literally pick it up and build it anywhere, really. What cooler place to play than in front of the pyramids? I'd say for me, that was probably the best place I've played.
Was it just because there's like a lot of like history around playing in front of the pyramids, or just the people, like the energy at that time? Like, what do you think it was for that moment?
I think for that would be just the historic venue, really. And I'd say for the crowds and things like that, the tournament in Nantes in France, that is the best crowd I've ever played in front
really?
of. They know how to host a tournament. just incredible to be in, you know, there. Like, the people don't even really know squash, but they get, it's just such a cool atmosphere. Like, they get behind players, and that would be what I would love to bring to every tournament, that atmosphere, and bring that atmosphere to these iconic venues that we get to play in.
Squash is very popular. Egyptians, like, both on the men's and women's side, the majority of the top 10s, like, are Egyptians. What would you say the difference between, like, the Egyptian atmosphere versus the French atmosphere was? Because it seems like traditionally there's a lot of energy at the Egyptian events as well.
Yeah, I think at the Egyptian events, the crowds don't really fill up until there's like semis and finals.
Ah, gotcha.
Where in France, it was a packed crowd from day one, which is how we would want events to be, really. It all depends on the place, I suppose. But I think in Egypt, they tend the crowds to gather a bit more close to the end of the event. Whereas in France, it was just an amazing atmosphere from day one.
The majority of like the top 10 is really made up of Egyptians as well. What are your thoughts on that? Like, why do you think there's such a strong presence from Egypt?
Every country seems to go through periods of greats. Going back to the day, you've got Pakistan, Australia, England, and now it's Egypt's time. I think when you have so many players playing and so many juniors playing, you're bound to create some amazing players. The competition there from such a young age is so high. You've got so many players fighting for those top spots that it just keeps pushing them to get better and better and better. In countries where there's not as many, the players don't have that drive to keep pushing, and then they just kind of reach a point where they're happy at being. Whereas in Egypt, there's so many kids coming through that they have to keep improving or else they're just not going to stay at the top spot. And then it filters in. I think if you looked at the amount of junior players and the amount that actually continue to play on into the pros, it is a very small percentage. But because there's so many juniors playing, it looks like so many. Whereas you've got the countries, you know, that are dying off, like Australia, they haven't really produced any top players in a long time. And I would say if you went there and looked at the juniors playing, I would say that there's hardly as any playing compared to what they were when all the greats were playing, and they had all of the competition, and there were so many of them that was fighting for that top spot.
I guess, like, talking about like countries and juniors coming out, like, what do you think Canada needs to do to produce more juniors and hopefully have more Canadians in the top 10 moving forward?
Yeah, I think getting more of them involved at a younger age, making it more accessible, going into schools and having school programs that filter in and keeping them interested in it so that they keep playing to an older age. Give them incentives to keep playing, whereas I think at the moment it's a very small group that is playing, and there's not many that end up keep going. It's kind of a means to an end. It's them wanting to get into university and then they just stop playing. I think if we opened it up to a larger group, then there would have to be more that wanted to keep playing. It's just a numbers game, I think, like anything. Why is Canada successful at hockey? Or, you know, it's a rite of passage. It's every kid plays hockey or skates at such a young age. So you're bound to find these standout athletes because there's so many playing. And that's what Egypt's doing. There's so many juniors playing squash. You're bound to get these standouts. Whereas Canada just hasn't quite had those numbers for a long time. I think my year in juniors was the last highly competitive year, and we were just on the cusp of that. The years before us, I mean, I remember the masses of juniors that were all competing for that top spot, whereas my year, it really was me and Michelle Gemmel, who was the top two by quite a long way. And, you know, now I look at the juniors, same thing. It just seems to be a couple that are at the top, but there's not the 10, 20 kids that are all fighting for that spot. It's kind of a two or three and then a drop off. So how are you supposed to expect to produce more players when there's just not the numbers?
It comes in as waves, right? I think, and I'm hoping squash does have a next wave of kids getting really excited. Because I think the nice part about squash too is, like, obviously there's a lot of technicals to it, but it's probably one of the more easier sports to really pick up. And again, as soon as you start hitting the ball, like, 9 times out of 10, like, most people are going to fall in love with the sport. At least that's what I see. I'm not sure if you would agree with that though.
Yeah, I would. I'd say to start out, for sure, it's, you know, you're hitting a ball against a wall. It's not like you need anyone to play with or anything. So I think to start with, yeah. And then when you get higher, then yeah, I think it does get a lot more technical. But to begin with, for sure, it's an easy sport to pick up. You hit a ball against a wall, it bounces, and you hit it again. I mean, you don't need someone across a net to hit it back to you. It's quite an easy sport in that sense that you can play it on your own.
Do you think having more outdoor courts would sort of shift in regards to getting more people involved in squash, do you think? Or do you think it's something else altogether? Besides like the social media streams, of course.
Yeah, I think it would make it more accessible. Mm. I think then you would get a larger population of people playing. It wouldn't just be the people that are member of these private clubs, a greater audience that would be able to participate. And I think that's always a good thing. But I think they have to work on growing it from the media outlets and all of that. Any sport that has the money in it, it's coming from the advertisements, from the media stuff. The more numbers you get, the more people are going to want to see it in the media. It's got to start at growing the numbers, but then I think the media is going to be really the greatest thing. If you've got the media behind you, you know, that's where you get the money for advertisements, and you push it that way, and the money will then come into the sport. But again, it has to start with the numbers. If you've not got the numbers, then people are not going to want to hear about it.
Well, I guess just sort of start taper off here. Like, I'd love for you to share maybe with some of the squash enthusiasts or listeners listening in, what are some of your goals for the rest of 2021?
My goals would be that I'm looking to try and break into the later rounds of these big tournaments. I'd love to be hitting some semis and quarters and hopefully break into that next ranking bracket, which I would say would be, you know, top 16, top 10. So that's a couple of my goals for the rest of this year, which hopefully I can tick off a couple of them.
And for anyone who is looking to enter in a career in squash or maybe any type of like professional sport, you know, what would be your advice to them to think about as they're transitioning into the state?
I think don't be scared to reach out to players and people that have been there and done it, and take advice, and don't be scared to reach out and ask for help. I got very lucky that I had players around me that helped to guide me, and I love when people that are just starting out reach out and ask me anything, because I was lucky that I had players around me that were able to guide me, and I had coaches who were very helpful in that whole transition and process. But not everyone is that lucky, and so I'm more than happy to help anyone that's got any questions regarding any of it, and I'm sure that any other sports person that's been there and done it would feel the same way. But yeah, you just got to give it your best, work hard, and surround yourself around people that's been there and done it.
Wise words from our squash superstar out here in Canada. But speaking about reaching out, for those listeners wanting to like maybe reach out or give you a follow, like which social media platforms can they follow you on? You know, what's your handles? Feel free to plug anything and plug yourself.
I would say Instagram is a good one. It also has my email attached to it. So if you have got any other questions, you can email me from there to make it a bit more professional if that's what you feel like. It would just be Holly with an extra E-N at the end.
And with that being said, like any final thoughts or anything you would have liked me to ask you today that we didn't touch on?
No, I think you hit all the spots, really. You had a large variety of everything.
Perfect. Well, Holly, firstly, thank you so much for coming on. I know it's quite tough for you, especially as you're traveling a lot and competing. So thanks so much for making time in your very busy schedule. So that's everything this week, Truth Seekers. And as well, thank you all of you listeners, as always, for your ongoing support and feedback. Please continue to follow us as well at We Want The Truth Pod on Instagram and We Want The Truth on Spotify, iTunes, and all streaming channels. And look forward to telling you guys the truth about something else next time.